It's Tuesday, November 6th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Everyone, is very rainy, very cloudy, very dreary here in Honolulu, but I got a great show for you anyway. Strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central Podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume. Because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central Podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from historic Ford Island in Honolulu, Hawaii. How are you? How are you doing? Well, I tell you, it's been a very rainy and wet last 3 or 4 days. I think it started on Halloween, and it just continued to be rainy and dreary all the way through. And I don't know, you know, we had a couple of years ago here in Hawaii, we had some just this ridiculous weather. It was 3 months of nothing but rain. So I'm beginning to wonder, are we going to have 3 months of rain again? I sure hope not. But the last couple of days, if any indication how the AKA winter here is going to be, it's going to be a wet one for sure. But I hope everyone's doing good. Got a great show lined up for you tonight. Of course, if you're checking out the show for the very first time, I want to welcome you to the Ohana. And make sure you check out geeknewscentral.com. Check out the great content over there. You can sign up for our newsletter so you can get the show notes delivered directly to your inbox immediately following the show. And also, of course, there's a link on the website to a podcast. You'll find our archive podcast over there. You know, this weekend, actually it was yesterday, I was doing a Sherry cast. I was actually recording my mom's show with her, and we were talking about some things. And I was reminded, sometime in the weekend, someone had talked to me, or there was just this basic discussion we had had about Ohana. And, you know, some of you have heard me talk, well, you've all heard me talk about Ohana on here before. But I think many times we say it in a kind of a, you know, just kind of easy, general way. And I want you all to really know that you really are part of the Ohana here. And in Hawaii, the word Ohana is very revered. It is truly a word that you say. It's when you share it with people that are part of your family, close friends, and it's essentially Ohana always comes first. And just, you know, many of us, and you know, no matter where you live, family always comes first. But in the Hawaiian sense, the Ohana meaning is very deep and very spiritual. So I want you all to know that really you're all part of the Ohana here, and part of the big, big extended family that I have. And I do appreciate, you know, everything. You guys send great comments from time to time, private emails, and all that stuff really is makes doing this show very, very special. So, again, if you're new to the audience, hey, welcome to the Ohana, and we hope that you'll enjoy the content and stay subscribed and tell some of your good friends about the show. I hope that you like it and stay subscribed, of course. All of you that have contributed to the One Laptop Per Child Fund, and we've had some more donations come in over the last couple of days, I want to definitely want to say thank you to everyone out there. And I've got about, let me look on the calendar here. I think we've got about 10 days before we need to start ordering the laptop. So if you are still thinking about or on the fence, we're definitely still looking for donations for the One Laptop Per Child buy that we're going to do. And you can send those donations to podcast at podcastconnect.com via PayPal. And I'll have, at some point here, I'm going to have a big post up on the website with recognizing all the people that have contributed. But, wow, here we are today. You know, I was at met with my banker and had to sign some paperwork, and we're all set to go to move in on to our new home on the 20th of November, and that's when our, you know, it's kind of a strange deal what's going on, but officially we get the house on the 20th, And I won't go into the particulars of some of the odd things that have happened, but the Packers are scheduled to come on the 19th, so they're going to pack this house out on the 19th, and part of the morning of the 20th, they're going to load the truck, then they're going to drive the 15 or 16 miles to the new place and start unloading. So we hope to be all in by the, well, we will, regardless, we're going to be in the new home by the evening of the 21st of November. So what that means is the studio is going to get tore down, and I'm going to be in transit getting everything moved over for the show that's supposed to be in your inboxes and online on the 20th. So what I'm looking for is someone that would be willing to be the guest host for the show for the 20th. And I may be up and able to actually do a show Thanksgiving night, or maybe even the day after Thanksgiving, and it all depends on how things go, but definitely looking for at least one guest host. So if you feel like you'd like to step in and wear the recording hat for one night, I'd love to have you be a guest host. Drop me an email at geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Now, as I said earlier, my mom and I recorded her latest show, the Sherry Cast, over at CHERIECast.com. So make sure you check out her show. It's a little different show. It's not a tech show. It's more of a about life in general. So check that out. We did a roundtable on Saturday, and wow, had an absolute full house. We actually ran out of seats for in the GoToMeeting session. We maxed out the attendance, which was great. I saw little ping-ups coming in, and I think we had probably 10 to 15 people that were actually turned away from the GoToMeeting session. So if you are one of those people, the recordings are now up online. The audio is up, the video, either if you want to watch it via Flash on the website or download it to your media player, you can do that. And we hope that you'll take the time to watch the roundtable. Three great presenters and just about an hour worth of content. And, of course, that event was hosted by GoToMeeting. And these days, whether you're in business or simply want to share something with friends or family, email and voicemail sometimes just isn't enough. That's why you should try GoToMeeting, a web conferencing solution that will revolutionize how you communicate with your business, associates, family, and friends. The ability to host online meetings is an absolute must for today's business. With GoToMeeting, it's just like you're all in the same room. Unlimited meetings for one flat rate means you can meet as often as you want for as long as you need. Try it yourself for free for 30 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. Try GoToMeeting free today. You know, I was watching the some information on the writer strike. And, hey, let me see here. Let me look around the room. Is the writer going to strike? Oh, look in the mirror. No. You know what amazes me about the writer's strike is that they're saying the late night talk shows or the, you know, like Jay Leno and those types of shows are not going to be able to continue. They'll have to go into a rerun. I'm like, aren't these guys like comedians and don't they do interviews? And why would you have to stop production on the show? You look at radio talk host. Do they have someone in the background writing? Do you look at podcasters? Do we have someone in the background writing our scripts for us? Just goes to show you folks where the true talent really, really is. You know, if I can sit here and I can do an hour show and in my little mini studio here, why can't Leno get up and, you know, he can read the newspaper. He can do a couple hours worth of research to find out what's going on in the world. It may not be as funny and have a big kick, but he can still have guests on and do, you know, interviews. You know, how hard is it to talk to somebody, really? So it is pretty shocking that these shows have to go into reruns because the writers aren't there. But I thought it's pretty ironic. It really is. Just goes to show you how far in advance new media really, really is. I want to talk a little bit about the Zune. Got an email from Rob Greenlee. He's now the Zune, working on the Zune team at Microsoft. And he'd sent me some info basically linking me up to the information that podcasters are going to need to get into the Zune marketplace starting on the 13th of November. there's a post on my website over that. So if you're a podcaster, you'll definitely want to pay attention to that. And then on the 13th, when the Zune Marketplace opens up and you can list your podcast, you'll definitely want to get it submitted. I guess the main thing I want to pass to everyone is make sure you have good, valid RSS feeds. And if your content is adult in nature, very, very adult in nature, you probably are not going to get listed in. You know, that cough is still hanging out of mine, and I don't know why. It just won't go away. It's just ridiculous. The doc said, about another 5 weeks of it, and that's been about 4 weeks ago, so I would think that it would be gone here. Okay, let me look at my little list here and see where I have got on my notes. I've talked about that, and we talked about this. So I guess we're good. Take care of a little bit more business here before we get going. So I tell you, tonight I have a special treat for you. One of the listeners of the show sent me an email about a couple weeks ago saying, "Hey, Todd, I'm getting ready. I'm moving a chair here. Do you guys just hear me bang that? I apologize." Sent me an email a couple weeks ago saying, "Todd, I found this great promo code for GoDaddy over on Dig or somewhere else, and they got a better deal than you do." So I did some investigation and sent my contact over to GoDaddy an email. Said, "Hey, what's the deal here? Can I get in on this?" And what it is if you're looking for a shared hosting account. Now, this code is only going to work on shared hosting accounts in which you subscribe for a 12-month period, okay? So normally you can get about a normal 10% discount for doing a 12-month shared hosting subscription over at GoDaddy. If you use the code TODD20 when you check out, that'll get you 20%. So TODD20, TODD20, will get you 20% on a shared hosting account over at GoDaddy. Now, that's only good for shared on 12 months or more, okay? So if you go for a two-year deal, you can, you know, really can rack up the savings there. Of course, the standard codes that work great at checkout are TODD. Todd will get you 10% off on any order, and then Geek5 will get you 15% off orders that are $20 or more. But that TODD20 is a new one. Spread that around. Share the wealth. But again, it is strictly for shared hosting accounts, okay? So that's the only real difference in that code. Thanks for GoDaddy for being a continued sponsor here at the Geek News Central podcast. All right, what have I got in the lineup for you tonight? I got quite a little bit of stuff and a lot of rumblings. Boy, I tell you, there's a lot of people are not happy with Apple in regards to a Leopard. And there's a new post out over on TomCarpick.com talking about massive data loss bug in Leopard. So if you are moving around a lot of media and you're transferring stuff from one drive to a next, or you're putting stuff on a USB drive, whatever it may be, you are going to want to read this particular post. And he's actually got an AVI file that shows the bug in progress. And he's got some pretty deep details there. So you'll be able to find out the information on this. So again, be forewarned that there is a pretty big bug out there that are causing people to lose some media. So, or lost data, which is not good. And, you know, that's kind of surprising that you would have lost data and just moving stuff from one directory to the next. Lots of stuff going on in the space front. Discovery has undocked from the International Space Station after some very successful spacewalks and delivering the Harmony module to the ISS. I believe Discovery is due to land at the Cape on Wednesday. So wish the crew the best of luck in coming back. Hope everything goes good. Shuttle looks like to be in great shape and a very real long mission this time. And part of the reason they can stay longer now at the ISS is they run off the power system from the International Space Station. They don't have to essentially burn the batteries of the space shuttle while they're at the station. But anyway, moving on here, there's a great article on Discovery Magazine. It talks about 20 things you didn't know about living in space. And some of these are pretty funny. So I have this up in the show notes for you tonight, of course, as always. I've got some new news on the BitTorrent front, and this comes from a Canadian ISP. apparently they didn't learn the lesson from what Comcast has been going through, but the Canadian ISP Bell Simtico has admitted that it uses bandwidth throttling techniques to impose limitations on peer-to-peer filing sharing during peak hours. And they're limiting applications like LimeWire, Kazaa, and different types of other peer-to-peer applications as well. So I guess they're not the only ones. And here we go again. This is just another, another affront on network neutrality. I don't know what can be done, and I don't know what the rules are in Canada. But those of you that are a customer of this ISP, I would recommend that you would lodge some sort of a protest with them. But, I'm sure we're going to start seeing more of this. And I'm frankly, it doesn't surprise me. And I don't know what we're going to need to do to reverse this trend as well. I had to laugh because over the weekend, the old server that was running Geek News Central had been running on Fedora Core 2. And that's been out of really being supported for a while. And I'm running now on a different Linux build. But that machine got essentially... well, they call it reprovisioning. I requested it be reprovisioned, and they upgraded it to Fedora Core 6. Now, I've turned that over to our administrator at Raw Voice, and he's going to be making that machine now into one of the Raw Voice assets. But as always, you never can keep up because Fedora Core 8 is scheduled to be released here very, very soon. And I'm already two revisions behind, but I have to live with what GoDaddy puts on, makes available. And they have to go through and test and everything. But anyway, at least I'm caught up quite a bit from Fedora Core 2 to Fedora Core 6 on that particular machine. But those of you that are Fedora fans, I'm sure you've been following this. But Fedora Core 8 is due here in the next week or so. All right, it's being reported that the DVD licensing group is going to be voting on closing copying loopholes. And this is a change to their license in which DVDs are produced. And this has been in progress, I guess, since about March. I believe we talked about it earlier in the year as well. But what they're trying to do is limit companies like Kaleidoscope, who has a home media server product that essentially rips the DVDs to the media center's hard drive and makes available the DVDs that the people have ripped or actually, put into the inventory. So what they're trying to do here is that the group responsible for the CSS copy protection is going to be changing the ruling so that it'll essentially make it illegal for companies that have devices like Kaleidoscope and others to rip DVDs to a hard drive for our personal viewing. I'm not really sure what's going to happen with this, but it's not a good thing when a company or a group can make a rule change that essentially can cause a company to go out of business. So we'll see what happens with Kaleidoscope if they're able to survive this, or if they have to go to court to protect fair use rights. I don't know, but. Here very, very soon, you're not going to be able to rip DVDs to media devices anymore based upon these new rules that are going to be put in place on the licensing. This next story touches pretty close to home because for 25 years, I lived and worked with essentially an IT infrastructure that was very much controlled by the IT staff. And the machines were very limited in what could be loaded on them. They were monitored. And security was very, very heavy, as you would expect. But many of you probably work in companies in which, you have a certain level of security and maybe a couple of IT guys on staff who are always driving you crazy, telling you what you can and cannot do. But companies are now starting to test security of their operations by hiring companies like Trace Security. And I found this a write-up on PC Magazine that involved Trace Security going into a financial institution on how easy they were able to breach the security system and be able to get in towards the computers that contained all the banking data. So, you know, if I'm thinking to myself, if this security firm is able to get into a financial institution through a little social engineering and get into the areas where the computers are that contain all the most valuable data, you know, where they could have installed some software or put some sniffing devices on, who knows what they could have put in, how secure are other businesses? Now, if you are a business owner, where do you guys keep your centralized servers? Are they under lock and key? Are they just sitting out? Do they have access? People get access to them easy? Do you pass people in your hallway at your work that you may not know? How secure is it? Well, Trace Security actually went around, and PC Magazine followed them around on one of their latest breaching tests. And it's just simply amazing how far they were able to get. And a simple thing of, you know, where they were told they had to be escorted and then the escort taken off and doing something else showed how easy it was for them to essentially, if they would have been real hackers or, you know, people looking to get information from the bank, they would have been able to do it very, very easy. So I would encourage all of you that are working in a business that has tight IT rules on what can be done and can't be done with your PCs to read this. If you're a business owner and you're looking to kind of test the security level of your enterprise or your business, you may want to check out the services that Trace Security offer and the essentially amazing way they are able to get in and really, if they would have wanted to, wreak havoc if they hadn't been paid to do the test. All right, for those of you that have been listening to the show for a while will know that I have a pretty big distaste for RFID chips. And I think if you've gotten a new passport recently, you'll know that they now have an RFID chip in them. When I go out to the Consumer Electronics Show in January, all the badges are going to have RFID in, and I'm not so worried about that per se. But if you live in Washington or you live in Vermont, there's going to be some new driver's license coming out in 2008, which contain RFID chips. And these are going to be designed so that for those of you that live in those states, you're going to be able to go into Canada and Mexico a lot easier because a lot of the data that's in a normal passport would be encrypted in your driver's license. Well, the Smart Card Alliance have called these particular driver's licenses, which contain RFID chips, unsafe. They haven't really said why, and of course they're probably like me, a little bit paranoid about what can be accessed through sniffing programs and such. But I think it's a good question that should be asked. Now, while these licenses are completely voluntary in both Vermont and Washington, they're going to be offering radio blocking sleeves as well with them. So it looks like you're going to be able to, in some way protect your identity through the blocking sleeves that they're going to provide. And I'd like to see what all the data that's contained on those, because it does, if it's got all your, if it's got your social and it's got your date of birth and your street address, you know, someone that's got a device that can sniff those out, really, with identity theft the way it is, really could do some damage just by strategically placing themselves in a public place and then sniffing the RFID tags as people walk by. That's for sure. So what do you guys think? Do you think if you live in Washington or Delaware, or if your state introduces these, would you opt in for an RFID-enabled driver's license to make yourself, make it easier for you to travel between Mexico and Canada if that's where you go from time to time? All right, next up, remember the Zune guy that's gotten two Zune tattoos on his back? And I'm sure you've all seen the picture of him. If you haven't, I'll have a link up to it in the show notes tonight. But the Zune guy is legally changing his name, check this out, to Microsoft Zune. I'm sorry. This guy is, wow. I don't know. First of all, probably Microsoft would come after him for violating trademark laws. And I'm sorry. This just goes beyond the realm of being a fanboy to rename yourself Microsoft Zune. First of all, I thought this was just a joke. but he's really going to be doing it. And to each his own. Yes, to each his own, but I will definitely not be naming any of my kids or renaming myself podcast something or whatever. just to think, I just can't imagine. I really can't. Hey, I do want to take a few moments and talk about the call I had with Hewlett-Packard last Friday on the HP MediaSmart home server, which has become widely available to place an order, to be ordered today online. And go into a little bit of the stuff that they shared with me, and some of it's pretty cool. It really, really is. I have a couple pages of notes. We did. We're on the phone about 30 minutes or so, and I'm just looking at my notes here, and I'm going to talk a little bit about this. Ever since CES in January of 2007, I've really been kind of waiting for this particular product to come out. I've been really excited about the HP device just because it looks so cool. It really, really did. And they designed this thing really from the ground up with consumers in mind. And it's got a form factor of 10 by 9 by 5, and it's designed to work really within any home office or living room. And it's going to come in two models. It's going to come in a 500 gig configuration with three empty drive bays, or a 1 terabyte configuration with two empty drive bays. It's going to be a hot swappable serial ATA drives. You'll be able to run it 24/7. You'll never have to turn it off. And one of the things they've added to it, and then they went out and they basically polled the public, and they said, okay, what do you like about the Windows Home Server, and what's it missing? What do we need to add to the operating system to make this a more, you know, this make this a better product? And one thing that they've added is what they're calling the HP Photo Web Share. And this is really, really cool. You know, how many of you really get sick of uploading pictures to Flickr or some of the other sites? And many times maybe you don't upload them all. You just, you know, do a smidgen of them. Well, they've got it set up so that you can send a email to a friend or family member a link, and you'll be actually give them access to all of your photos that you can centrally organize on the HP Photo Web Share site. What's really cool about this is people can download the pictures. They can actually submit pictures to you to add to the library. And then for folks that don't have printers, and I think this would be great for, you know, grandparents or so, they can order prints via Snapfish. So they can actually, you know, this is going to work out great for me because, you know, my mom's in Michigan. I'm here. We take a lot of digital pictures. I don't put as many online as I should, so I'll be able to send her a link. She'll be able to come in and view the newest pictures as I put them up. And if she wants to order them, she can order them, or she can print them right there on her printer. Really, really cool. I think this is something that's going to be a very popular product with the HP offering. Additionally, they've made it available so that you can, you know, right now, my wife has a computer. She's got her music on, a lot of Japanese music that she's ripped from her CDs. She's got music that she's bought. I've got my music on my computer. My kids are starting to buy some music. So, you know, we've got some music spread around between two or three different machines here. And the music sharing ability within the Windows Media Centers in a new product they're going to call Windows Media Connect, where you're going to be able to have a centralized place for all of your media. And what's really cool about this is not only if you have a media, you know, some sort of a media device that's connected to your network, but if you got an Xbox, you'd be able to, you know, access all the music from a central location. But also, if you're using iTunes, they've got a product called Server for iTunes. And what this is going to allow is every iTunes machine or every iTunes install to access the central library of music to serve it up and be able to play and access playlists and so forth. Very, very cool. Online at most sites available today, starting at $599 for the 500 gig model or $749 for the 1 terabyte with a projected shipping date, end of November. I did ask them what was going to happen with the ISP issues. In other words, we're going to allow people to come in, like on this HP Photo Web Share. Now, what are ISPs going to do if they block port 80? You know, because a lot of times ISPs say, hey, you can't run a server on your internet connection. And what they've really done is they've opened up port 80 so people can get into this particular machine. And they feel that the usage is going to be low enough with family and friends that it's not going to raise the ire of ISPs. But I still question whether or not that is going to be the case. Now, I have a write-up on my website as well, and I hope you'll take a look at that. And hopefully I'll get a demo unit to play with. I think I'm just going to probably, I've got a machine here that I was using as a test bed, and but that device really looks, it's sweet. It's pretty. So I do wonder, though, how many of you are going to order one of these? Have you thought about it? Have you want to order one from a different company? Because there's four or five companies that are releasing these you know, these media devices now. So are these Windows Home Server platforms? Have you guys heard of anything else cool with any of the other vendors? Definitely drop me a line, geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com, or the call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. You know, I got started pretty early on the show tonight, but I am just like, I'm whacked. I'm drained. I really, really am. I don't know why either. It hasn't been a super strenuous day, but gosh, I just don't know what it is. I don't feel like I'm 100% tonight. Moving on here, we've got a, I saw this box at CES as well, and it was really priced really high at the time. It's still pretty expensive, but there's a company called Airbox. Airbox CM3 turns your car into a 100 mile per hour hotspot. Essentially what this does is the new Airbox CM3 mobile router allows devices like PDAs, laptops, gaming consoles to be connected to the internet in a moving vehicle via Wi-Fi or one of the Ethernet jacks with no additional software or PCMCI cards required. And you can use this via a 3G digital cellular telephone network. So the boxes I saw at CES had one to two EVDO cards in it. And I believe this one only has a single EVDO card in it. So you can buy one of these. And if you've got the money to spare, which I don't know how many people would be able to do this. If this box allows me to stick the card in separately, I think I would buy one. But I think it actually comes with a card embedded, so you actually have to have additional service on it. But it's available for $499 with an additional, with the cellular plan required. So if they were smart, they would just make this thing car-proof where I could use my, you know, the EVDO stick that I have now in it and then pull it when I, you know, get to my destination. Very, very cool. Great for businessmen. That live in their cars, real estate agents, I could see some real heavy use of this. And I don't know if I'd have this in for my kids doing gaming. They don't get to game very much at home, but it's powered by a cigarette lighter, and it's very, very small. So it's about the size of a paperback. Very, very cool. I'd seen these at CES, but the first time I'd seen them advertised or talked about on other online sites. Hey, in Japan, for years, I thought it was amazing. You could walk down the street and there would be beer machines on the side of the street. You could buy hard liquor out of the machines, cigarette machines everywhere. And, you know, kids being kids, you know what they're going to do? They're, you know, they're going to go to these vending machines and they can get cigarettes and then get alcohol essentially right off the street without having to go into a store. Well, there's been a crackdown in Japan on this now. And the Fujitake company has rolled out a new vending machine that is kind of unique. It makes a person stand in front of the machine, push a button, and it takes a picture of the person. Then it uses photo recognition software to determine if the person that it's taken a picture of looks old enough to buy a cigarette. If the person does, it allows the purchase to continue through without any additional intervention. If it thinks that the person is too young, it makes them insert a driver's license, I believe, for age verification. And what I found amazing about this is, and this is in a vending machine, is that a test of 500 people, and where they ran them through, it had a 90% accuracy rate being able to determine adults and people that shouldn't be buying cigarettes out of the machine. So very, very cool. And I'm sure the kids will find a way to game this thing. This is the first initial crackdown I've seen in Japan or change in attitude in vending machines. It's on the side of the street. So very interesting to say the least. Okay, there's a great article on Gizmodo, and this is a camera that is going to get the paparazzi and different people in clubs are just going to go crazy with. It's called the Wearable V-Hold R Palm Size Camcorder. It's tiny, takes a pretty good picture. It's like 3.5 inches in length, and it's just a body, and it's all camera with a trigger button. People can take video with this. So they're saying it's used for snowboarders and those types, but give me a break. It's going to shoot video in a 640 by 480 at 30 frames per second. This thing's going to be used by paparazzi. It's going to be, I can't even imagine where this thing's going to be used at. If you see a guy walking around and he looks like he's holding a, you know, like a little pencil or something, he's actually got a video camera and he could be videotaping you. So don't see what the price on this was. Pretty pricey, $349. But very small, very portable, and it uses a micro SD card to store the what it records. It doesn't say how long it'll do a recording of, but I guess based upon whatever size memory chip you have in it. You know, the USB little toys that people make, you know, it just amazes me what the different little things that come out. You know, I've seen the cooler from a USB connector. I've seen, you name it, little toys and stuff that do stuff. You know, you've all seen all the crazy stuff they've got to plug into a USB port. Well, now this tops it all. A USB mini vacuum. Yes, you heard it correctly. A mini vacuum. It looks and works just like a big vacuum does. I'm serious. This thing looks like a regular vacuum. It's 8 inches tall. It's available for $20. I can't believe it. I can't. I just... If you need something to vacuum the crumbs up off your desk, here you go. This is available for you for $20. Oh, what will they think up next? If you're a QuickTime user, you'll definitely want to pick up the latest patches. Apparently, there's some pretty big security holes in QuickTime right now. And if you haven't patched it, you'll definitely want to. I think the version 7.3 let me read here. 6 out of 7 of the security holes fixed by the new QuickTime version 7.3 are the kind that attackers or nasty websites could use to install unwanted software just by convincing a QuickTime user to view a specially crafted image or movie file. So be careful out there if you're using QuickTime and you haven't upgraded, but please do. Please upgrade it so you don't leave yourself open. All right, I guess the big news today, and it's so big, and so many people were talking about it. I don't even know if I want to spend time on it, but Google announced today the G Phone, and it really isn't a phone. It's more of a software build that they have worked in conjunction with the Open Handset Alliance to introduce, I guess it's an operating system called Android. And what they have done is touting it as Android is its first truly open and comprehensive platform for mobile devices. It includes an operating system, user interface, and applications. All of those software is to be run on a mobile phone without the proprietary obstacles that have hindered mobile innovation. They've got a whole bunch of handset makers on board, I guess over 30, along with technology providers. They've worked with T-Mobile, Verizon. Who else is on the list? They said they're going to bring some phones based upon this standard available to market sometime in 2008. It appears that the actual software is some sort of a Linux derivative, and there's an SDK that's going to be available in about a week or so. But this is going to be the first open handset that So long as the, here's the trick though. You've got Motorola, you got Qualcomm, HTC, T-Mobile, and others who are have agreed to bring handsets to the market with this platform, but there's nothing to say that they can't still lock down the phones with their own applications on there and still make it difficult for people. So we'll see what happens in mid-2008 when handsets become available, if they're really open, or if this is just, you know, if it's some blunder by Google. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But I truly hope that the handsets that are brought to market are really open and a big development community gets behind the phones. You guys hear my kids in the background? It's about 9 here, and they're still up. So I'm about ready to pause the recording and stick my head out and say, get in bed. But I'll give them a few more minutes. Hey, let's move on here. Technorati has dropped content older than 6 months. So if you're a big Technorati user and you're using it for research, I guess to save on infrastructure, they have removed content that's older than 6 months. So if you're looking to get in-depth searches for blogs and stuff, you'll definitely want to use the Google blog search, because Technorati is their material only is going back 6 months now. All right, I found this cool website called Zilock. Zilock allows you to rent anything from anyone. And if you're looking, this thing, it's pretty cool. It's a new site, but once you register, you can add any object you own for rental. And you define the price, the area that you're in, where it can go, the conditions. And they'll put together a rental agreement and vice versa. It's very, very cool. So, you know, I'm thinking to myself, you know, I go all over the place. You know, like, for example, Angelo, our lead developer, flew out to Phoenix this last weekend, and he went to PodCamp Arizona. So I thought it would have been cool if we could have had a big flat screen on a TV connected to a computer and a slideshow going on with our products and services. He was attending the sessions, but it had been cool just to let that run. Imagine if I'd have known about this beforehand, I could have went and looked in the Phoenix area and seen if someone had a flat screen that they wanted to rent me for a day, and I could have rented it and probably saved a lot more money than what some event organizer would have charged. So some very cool ideas here that could be implemented. It was not available in the U.S. up until today, so you'll be able to get into Zilock today and play around with it. The link will be up in the show notes, of course. It's a us.zilock, Zilok.com. How many of you are still ICQ instant message users? I think it's been relegated to the geeks. I was reading a post on Blog Nation that say ICQ is still number one instant message client in Russia. You know, I spend the majority of my time talking with people on IM via my ICQ number. If you still use ICQ, hey, hook me up with become my friend on ICQ. My number is 2233. 255 2233255. And I love ICQ. I still use it a lot. I like it better than any of the other instant message clients. But I think it's just a geek thing. I think it is. I think that's what it primarily was used by initially. I know most every people use other instant message clients, but I use Trillion. I have accounts on all of them, but most of my chats are up on ICQ. And a little more Leopard news. The Leopard app casualty list continues to grow, partly because of the configuration that Leopard comes in when it's initially installed and leaving the firewall deactivated upon installation. And when people figure that out and they've activated the firewall, they're finding that Skype, voice IP applications, World of Warcraft, those are all applications that are breaking after the firewall is activated. So apparently, some Adobe Creative Suite users also are having problems running Illustrator, and that's being crashed. So a whole bunch of stuff is not working well with Leopard. If you've got an application that is not cooperating, which I found that I was worried about the Focusrite Sapphire box that I have that I use for recording on the road, and it turns out, as reading through forums, there's some sort of an audio feedback problem for a Focusrite user. So another reason not to upgrade to Leopard. Also, on the Windows side, Windows users are getting bitten by a MacroVision zero-day bug. And I'll have the link up to this in the show notes. Essentially, a very serious and critical flaw. But the only difference is someone has to actually get access to your machine physically, or you have to enable it by being social engineered or something. So it's a 10 on the warning list, but as far as ease of implementation, it's not super high, but still enough of a concern out there. There is some patches out there, so if you are using MacroVision, definitely want to go and get the update for that, which is available via their website. Well, last thing is, I don't talk politics on the show, but I do want to talk about what happened during a presidential debate a couple weeks ago, I guess. And I don't even know when this happened. Maybe it was last week. But apparently, Fox News sent out cease and desist letters to all the Republican presidential candidates, basically saying, hey, you can't use any of the content from the debate in your advertising. This is our copyrighted material. Naughty, naughty. Well, I guess all the other candidates kind of bowed down to Fox, except for Mitt Romney, Governor Mitt Romney. I guess he's originally from my state that I grew up in Michigan. But is that right? I'm not even following it that close, but I think that's where he's from. But essentially, the Mitt Romney campaign came back to Fox and said, hey, no, we think the utilization of that footage is fair use. So good on them for standing up to Fox for saying, hey, we think the footage is fair use. We're going to use it. So we'll see what News Corp does if they come back after him a little harder on this. But nice to see that particular campaign step up to the old media types that are out there. I don't know if Fox likes to be called old media, but anything that's on the television's old media. All right, I've got a couple of voicemails tonight. Yeah, 47 minutes. We're running short on time, primarily because the Google phone thing was like dominated today in the news. I think everyone lost their minds, to be honest with you, and that's the 90% of the commentary that was out there on all websites. And if you looked over at techmeme.com, it just dominated like half the website. And I was just like, oh, forget it. You know, they don't even have phones out. It's just discussion of a phone. It's vaporware. And, you know, why are they giving so much press to vaporware? You give me a phone that's really open and we can build to it, then maybe I'll get excited. But this is, you know, we're a long ways away from having handsets or even available. So, yes, short on content, but I do have a couple of voicemails and a whole bunch of email. So as always, geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Call the voicemail hotline, 619-342-7365. Here comes the first voicemail.
Hey, Todd, it's John from Liquid.
Hey, John.
Anyway, I'm not sure that was your best show when you were kind of groggy, as the caller said, on Friday's show.
I don't think it was.
It was a good show. And most of your shows, actually all of your shows are really good. And, you know, that's why I listen all the time.
Well,
anyway,
thanks.
I wanted to chime in on the cashless society. I use cash a lot. And I do it because it's a budgetary reason. You know, I like to set my budget and say, hey, okay, $300, that's my tech budget. I put it in cash. And when I spend $300 out of that envelope and it's gone, that's the end of the budget. You know when I hit it. I know when I look at it and go, ooh, you know what? I think I might save this and roll it into next month's budget so I can get some cool toys and things like that. Or, you know, and the other thing is sometimes I don't want to be tracked. I don't want them to have all my credit card information and they send me all that stuff and to do all that. Many, many, many years ago, every time you go into a Radio Shack, you had to give them that personal information so they look it up and you get the damn catalog. I didn't need the catalog, and I didn't want and I don't want ecologically minded, and I don't want that stuff sometimes. Who you are, they can't track your buying habits. They just have to say, hey, this is so-and-so. And I've got to, on that same note, not being tracked, Safeway. I'm sure Bill Gates gets a lot of buying stuff because I use his name. And Steve Ballmer, I use his name. Anyway, that's my two cents. Okay.
Hey, that's cool. You know something I think really, you know, it could become to a point in our society, and I think it already has somewhat, where, you know, let's say, for example, you use your credit card and you buy a bottle of booze. Then 6 months later, you apply for a life insurance policy. Or let's say you bought some cigars. Bought some cigars for a friend. And you go and apply for life insurance. They say, do you smoke? You say, no. And it turns out they do some sort of a check on you. Say, hey, you bought cigars 6 months ago. You must smoke. We're going to put you in a higher risk. So I agree there are significant reasons to use cash out there. And envelope system, you definitely follow along with some people that I know. But I think that, you know, the envelope system is a great way, especially when you are have like end of year bills coming due, like tax payments, property tax, that kind of stuff. If you plan it right and you leave it in your account and you budget it in, but some people, you know, they see the balance in their checking account. Oh, I can afford that. And then little do they remember they got a $2,000 property tax and $1,000 worth of home insurance they have to pay. So I agree. There's a great way to have that envelope system, although I don't recommend people keeping a lot of cash in their homes. In this day and age, it's a very dangerous thing. But you can do it via markers. Have a marker system and use little, notepads, and then just deduct that out of your checking account balance in QuickBooks or whatever one you do. Don't even look at that online banking balance. That way you can kind of have a way to save and then not have cash in your home. Very, very cool. Thanks for your feedback. Here comes the next voicemail.
Hey, Todd. It's Susabelle in St. Louis.
Hey, Susabelle.
I guess I'm one of those geeks that has way more computers than she should have, but I have a fairly robust home network, and I run two computers on there regularly. One is my laptop, which I also take back and forth to work every day, and one is a high-end Dell that I'm running Vista on, basically just using it for testing software and compatibility issues with adaptive technology. My husband has a computer on the network, and each of my teenagers has a computer on the network, and I also have a file and print server running on the network. And then I have a second laptop, an older Dell that I don't use all the time, but it has a few pieces of software on it that I use for adaptive technology type purposes and creating audio files and things like that. It runs really good, but it's old, and so occasionally it's on. Three of the machines on the network are wireless, and the rest of them are all hardwired. And then, of course, at work, I have the laptop that I carry back and forth and two desktop machines. The one desktop machine is used for keeping an eye on everything on in the computer lab that I monitor, and the other one is just my regular work machine that I use for email and writing reports and making PowerPoint presentations and all that other kind of good stuff we do at work. But yeah, I probably have control of way more machines than I may need to, but it's kind of nice to always know you have a backup, and so if one of them fails or has an issue or needs to be doing something different, I've got another one I can pull up and just use and do whatever I want to do. So we're kind of addicted to our machines, I guess, at home and also at work. And I don't know. I don't think I'd have much of a job without one sitting in front of me because I wouldn't have anything to do. So turn them up. There's seven at home and two at work, plus the one that travels around. So that's probably more than I need. Talk to you later. Keep up the good work.
Hey, Susabelle, thanks for your comments. I tell you, you're not alone. This particular topic probably has gotten more email alone than I have gotten. This is probably the single most popular subject I think I've talked about in a long time based upon the number of email responses. And I'm not going to be able to get through all of these tonight, even with the extra time that we have. I would just drive you guys crazy. So let me take a sampling of these. I guess maybe first I had to just tell you guys again what my layout is here. All right, I've got, I work off a laptop primarily. That's my primary machine I have in front of me open all the time. It's an HP machine, a couple years old. Then I've got a white label box I built myself that's down here to the right of me. That's a machine that does all the recording. Then I have an old box, an old Windows NT box. It runs my bulletin board system, which is going to come offline when we move. That's going to be finally put to rest. And that machine is generally, it's been on for years and years and years, and it's tied into a firewall system. Then I got the MacBook Pro on a desk here that we do all the video editing on. And then we kind of have like a central computer in the office that my wife uses, my kids use, and they need to do reports and that kind of stuff. That's here. That's an additional computer that's on the other side of the office. Then my wife has a laptop she primarily uses downstairs. And then my kids have, my three kids share a single, it's a real cheapo e-machine, I think. And matter of fact, I really need to do something, put some more memory in it or something, because it hardly runs. But what does that make it? That makes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So I got 6 PCs in the house and one, actually 2 Macs. So the Mac Mini really kind of serves as nothing more than a video stream stuff for Ustream. It's been kind of retired. So yeah, I've got more than I need here, and have to keep them. You know, I try to make sure they stay shut down too, because electricity bill, whoo, can become quite a monster as well by having all this PC stuff now. But as the kids get older, I'm sure they're each going to want their own laptop, and I can't blame them. They've been, you know, they've been raised in a geeky family. And as a matter of fact, they're getting to that age, the point now where they're probably going to want to have their own machines here soon. They're doing more and more schoolwork on them, so it's kind of hard for them both to do their homework at once. But anyway, got an email from Robert, and he goes and says, "Hey, Todd, we have 8 machines here. My wife, daughter, and I each have a desktop and a laptop. I also have a file server, which is supposed to be replaced soon. He's hoping with a Windows Home server. He's got a Linux Ubuntu box. He's also got a, what does this say? Also AT&T, a terrible thing. So no iPhone for me. I do have iPod Touch, and it's here. Finally, for those who think your show or any show is long, I suggest listen to any podcast in Windows Media Player and set the playback speed to 1.4. Keep up the good work, Robert in Tennessee." Got an email from Lena. Says, "Hey, Todd, when I didn't get your show notes, I just assumed you were too busy to podcast. No, I'm bad. I haven't been downloading your podcast to iTunes because I listen each time I get the show notes. Imagine my surprise when I found out that you were podcasting without me. I have learned my lesson. We'll either hook up with iTunes or check your website more often. On a lighter note, regarding your new opening, when I first started listening to your show, I listened to many of your archive shows. What made me laugh? The earlier podcast where you were slapped to charge up your show. You should use that opening once in a while. It's a hoot. Anything you do will be good, I'm sure. Take care, Lena D." And Lena's got a great podcast as well that she's just started as well. I'll have a link up to that in the show notes. But you know something, Lena? If I'm too busy, if you don't get a show, something's wrong. And if I haven't told you in advance, you definitely want to come looking for me, okay? Send out the search party, all right? Because I'm like the mailman. I don't want to miss here, and I want to keep the shows coming. I got an email from John. "Hey, Todd, a bit of a long email here, but you asked about people's PCs, so I'm answering it." A little smiley here. And, John, I think you're the winner, man, on the number of computers. He says, "My primary PC is a kick-butt high-powered PC that I built just for about all of my day-to-day usage. My second PC is for video editing to also allow for rendering when I'm using my main PC for everything else. My laptop is my general use system that I use for travel. My fourth PC is in my studio and is used exclusively for podcasts for recording, creation, and mastering. My wife's PC is obviously just that, her PC. I don't do anything with it. It's all hers, but still, it's a fifth PC. I have a 6th PC that is rarely used, but is a test box to install different operating systems. And also," he says, "hey, get this. I also have a 350 megahertz Athlon PC running PC DOS 7. Oh, my goodness. And Windows for Workgroups 3.1. Does that still work? Yes, with network internet connectivity that I use to play older games that don't work properly through emulators or through Windows XP. This way, if I have a hankering for Magic Carpet or other such games, I can run them in their native environment." You guys been hearing that in the background? Something is making a scratching noise on this show tonight. I got to track that down, find out what's going on there. Anyway, he goes, finally, I have two old Sun workstations I use when I need a Unix fix. I've been a Sun system administrator for over 12 years, so I also use them to try various open source packages for Solaris. And yet, even with all the hardware that I have, the Apple fanboys expect me to go out and buy a whole new Mac when it's fully possible that I won't like OS X. Worse, if I refuse to do so, I'm being a I can't repeat this on the show. Yes, I've been called that by more than one Apple fanboy. No, I like to use what hardware I already have, and I already own a lot of hardware. It makes no sense for me to go out and buy yet another more expensive box when there is distinct possibility that I won't like it. Except for my main PC, my laptop, and the Sun workstations, all of these are old PCs I put together from older parts. But anyway, I'm going to continue on here, but I agree, John. I built all the machines here except for the laptops and my wife's PC underneath her desk are all machines that I built from spare parts as well. So even the podcast recording machines the same way. Moving on here, let's see. I got an email from Jim. He said, hey, thank you. This will be interesting for you. An open letter Apple podcast in the iTunes Wi-Fi store. It's about the financialpodcast.com is wanting Apple to add Wi-Fi, add a podcast to the Wi-Fi store. So that's available. Put a link up to that. Got an email from Roberto in Brazil. Sent me a link to two different articles. One was from the Grand Challenge. I believe this is to do with the DARPA Challenge. So I'll have that linked up. And I got an email from Scott on Verizon EVO. Hey, Todd, just reading your post on Verizon EVO service. I have Verizon EVO services unlimited. They just say using services like peer-to-peer, et cetera, would use up 5 gigabytes fast. They have not outlined it. I run FeedRunner. I really don't use peer-to-peer, but I also run streaming from time to time in an IRC and always watching Chris Perillo's feeds, and I don't... even come close to 5 gigs. I use EVDO as my second source of internet when I'm away from home, and I'm away from home a lot. You know, Scott, I'm a huge user of EVDO too, and my EVDO card goes with me whenever I leave the house and have a PC with me. But I would definitely use more than 5 gigs if I was a month, if I was on Verizon. I would be shut down. I really, really would. I move a lot of data around. 5 gigs is really not that much media over a 30-day period, especially if you're downloading stuff. So I guess we'll have to see what happens with Verizon and they're basically changing in policy, or not in policy, but they're, you know, this latest upgrade to their terms of service. All right, next up, I got an email from Tom. He said, "Hey Todd, don't load Vista." It beep. He says, I have had 10 of my students pulling their hair out trying to run it. I have 4 computers and a track, my XP with Office 98, SoundForge, and Acid. He says, a G4 Apple that I only use it with Pro Tools to record the weekly podcast. He says, I got an Ubuntu for Perl and Future. And he's got a Dell desktop with XP, which I use for mobile recording. And I also have Word and Outlook 2007 on the Dell. So he says, I don't want Office 2000 on the computer I use on a day-to-day basis. And he goes on and just basically, that's from Tom. Got an email from Kevin. And here's another, and I won't go into this full details of this. He says, I have 6 machines that I use most of the time. I work in IT and I have a family of 5, so I have a few machines that I use differently. And I don't want to go all through all these. But it's a lot of work to maintain all that. And here's what he's ending with. It's a lot of work to maintain all that, but it sure is easier since I got the MacBook for the kids. They use that most of the time. No virus yet. They don't have the password for the install, so that is good. Everything is on a gigabit network using LAN cable for speed to handle all the video transfer. The laptops use a wireless G network because they're mainly viewing text. I used Vista but gave up after a month. Too many problems. Since I don't run any other Microsoft software, it was crashing all the time. Later, Kevin in Georgia. But Kevin, thanks for your email on your makeup of your system there. Got an email from Jason. He said, hey, Todd, on your last show, you asked about upgrading a Mac OS X Leopard. I know that you don't listen to the Twit podcast that Leo Laporte produces, but there was a discussion about Leopard on Windows Weekly 38. All of the podcasts is supposedly to be Windows Weekly. The entire episode covered Apple, though you thought you might be interested in listening to it and deciding to spending your $129 upgrade. Also got an email from Jason. Said, you mentioned some concerns with Vista stability and how one user reverted back to XP. That reminds me of when I went from Windows 3.1 to Windows 95. Things didn't work great for about 6 months until after the 95 release, mostly because the application had to catch up with the operating system. He says there's been a steady process in third parties releasing Vista-compatible drivers for their hardware. Many of these drivers are pushed down through Windows Update. And I am aware of that, and I'm just going through here. And he's put me some links to the Outlook 2007 performance issues and some stability stuff as well. And I do understand that, but in all honesty, there's a lot of people that are going back from Vista to XP. It's been a year. They've had plenty of time, and I don't foresee a service pack coming anytime soon. But, gosh, what a mess it is that Microsoft has made of Vista. Going on here from Victoria. Hey, Todd, this is Victoria. I called in asking on advice on how to handle future product and press releases from PR people. Thanks for answering my question. I will take your advice. Here's the link to my flagship podcast, Tango Eternal. I try to focus on old Tango music, but sometimes I play the newer styles too. From Tango Eternal, anyone can find my other podcast, Urban Outside. And this is it, tangoeternal.blogspot.com. I'll have a link up to her show. Everybody check that out in the listener comments tonight. All right, what else? So you got an email from, hey, Todd, just sent some money for that. Oh, this is someone that sent money in for the OLPC fund. Again, thanks to everyone that did that. I appreciate it. Wow, a lot of email tonight, bunch that I didn't get to. So I apologize if I didn't get everyone's email read or if I had to shorten up on some of the other ones here. But we are definitely a bunch of geeks. We are definitely a bunch of geeks. Now, you know, all of us that have got these computers that are running, how many of us have stacks of computers down in our basements or in our storage rooms that we're thinking, I'll do something with it someday? Guilty. How many of you got motherboards that are like 5 or 10 years old thinking, I'll do something with them someday? We are a bunch of pack rat fools. We really, really are. You know, if you get ready to finally get rid of some of that pack rat stuff, please remember that a lot of people are taking the motherboards now and different types of cards that you have, and they're actually recovering the gold from that stuff. So turn them into a recycling center. If you can't sell them, don't throw them in the trash. Make sure they go into recycle so that they can recover the precious metals and the golds that are on the different cards. So enough for tonight. Wow, we're going to finish a little early. Thanks, everyone. Geeknews@gmail.com. Geeknews@gmail.com. Call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Next show's coming from Vegas. So I hope to have a special guest on. No promises yet, but we'll keep our fingers crossed. It'll probably be a short show because, you know, the temptations of Vegas are, well, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. I have to be good. I really am going to be meeting up with some people. If you're going to be there, definitely call me, 808-741-4923. 808-741-4923 is my cell. And, of course, call the voicemail hotline. Leave your comments anytime, 619-342-7365. Again, geeknews@gmail.com. Everybody have a great week. We'll see you on Friday. Take care. Aloha.